The history of Macedonia. Alexander marches from Granicus to Miletus. Now, Granicus was a small battle compared to the big encounters with Darius in the years to come. It was not tactically subtle. Alexander needed to fight, did not want to wait and risk the enemy withdrawing to another, perhaps better position, and trusted to the skill and the ferocity of his men. He set a personal advance example after ordering the general advance, could do nothing to influence wider tactics, trusting his subordinates to do the right thing. Prevention, as much as real difficulty, cautioned commanders against attacking across an obstacle. Alexander trusted the quality of his men and their prowess and weaponry and the willingness to push on and the ability of their leaders to seize control of whoever was nearby and deal with the chaos better than the enemy. It was a gamble. And if Clitus had been slow off the mark, then the king might well have died. The campaign failed there, and then. Luck and skill were with the Macedonians, and the gamble paid off. Alexander had his first battle, his first major victory, and one that he could describe in pleasingly Homeric style. 300 captured Peneplese were sent to Greece to be dedicated at the Temple of Athena in Athens, the most prominent victim of Xerxes' depredations. Alexander personally dictated the inscription to be sent up with them. Alexander, son of Philip and the Greeks, except the Spartans, set up these spoils from the barbarians dwelling in Asia. In practical terms, the only field force the Persians possessed in the area was beaten, dispersed, and deprived of most of its leaders. An officer who had served with Parmenio in the advance guard was named Satrap in place of Arcides, showing that Alexander intended to make use of the Persian administrative structure. The king paraded his mildness, announcing that he would not punish the citizens of Zelia because they had been forced to support the enemy. Other cities were occupied without resistance in the days and weeks that followed. The Persian commander of the garrison at Sardis led a deputation of its leading men to surrender the city and its well-filled treasury. Alexander announced that they and other Lydians would be free and allowed their own customs. This was not a change, since they appeared to have enjoyed these things under Persian rule, and as under Persia, they were expected to contribute money and food to the new master. Ephesus had declared for Philip in 336 BCE, setting up his statue before tearing it down when the Macedonians retreated the next year and a group of oligarchs seized power. 4 days after accepting the surrender of Sardis, Alexander came to the city to find that the Persian garrison had fled and a welcoming crowd was waiting for him. There were riots, but only against the oligarchs, several of whom were lynched before Alexander's men restored order, and he forbade any more reprisals. A new democracy was established with his approval, and similar systems were set up in other cities after the Persian-backed oligarchies were expelled. Like Philip, Alexander's attitude to different forms of government was entirely pragmatic, favoring in every case whatever regime was most likely to support him. The king's piety continued to be public. In Lydia, he ordered construction of a temple of Zeus on a site struck by lightning, while at Ephesus he didn't take over the levies formerly paid to the Persian king, and instead ordered that they be used to restore the great temple of Artemis, which had burned down at the time of his birth and was still awaiting reconstruction. However, an offer to undertake and contribute to this work on Alexander's part was refused by the Ephesians. Alexander paused at Ephesus for several weeks, making offerings to Artemis and holding a formal parade of celebration, while detachments went out to accept the surrender of other cities. During this time, he sat for a portrait by the famous Greek painter Apelles. The brash young king was friendly but inclined to voice strong opinions about artistic technique, in spite of his scant knowledge. Eventually, the artist quickly suggested that Alexander had better stop because even his junior assistants were laughing at his ignorance. An early version of the portrait of the king, astride Bucephalus, did not meet with royal approval, but when modified to show him wielding a thunderbolt like Zeus, the king was delighted, prompting him to give no less than 20 talents to the painter, and announced that from now on only Apelles was allowed to paint his official portrait. The Persians were regrouping. Now a fleet had gathered and was on the way. The Persian commander at Miletus on the coast had written offerings to surrender, but changed his mind when he heard the help would soon come by sea. Alexander took a column of troops and went there, overrunning the outer city without resistance, but being held by the strong inner wall area. His own ships came to support him and arrived 3 days before the Persian navy, securing the approaches to the harbor and the island of Lade. Arrian claims that the enemy navy had 400 ships to Alexander's 160, and then for once tells a story where Parmenio urged the reckless course, saying that they should risk a naval battle that he offered to command. The king refused, as must surely have been correct unless Arrian's estimates of relative strengths are widely off the mark. At sea, the prowess of the Macedonian army and its king mattered little, while any serious defeat would be damaging. Miletus was where the Ionian revolt against Persia had begun in 499 BCE, which had led eventually to the Athenian intervention and the subsequent Persian invasions of Greece. The city had eventually fallen after the rebels suffered a catastrophic defeat in the naval battle of Lade. This time the Greeks refused to fight, and the Persians were not inclined to attack into the narrow waters around the harbor, where their numbers could not be brought to bear. They could not reach the defenders and had to base themselves on the shore near Mount Mycale, some 10 miles away, and had to go even further to find enough fresh water. A representative from Miletus was sent to Alexander proposing that the city become neutral, open to both sides. Unsurprisingly, the proposal was rejected, and the Macedonians set about making a breach in the city wall. Once this was created, an assault was launched and was quickly successful. Active defenders, especially units of Greek mercenaries, were massacred as they tried to escape. One group of 300 packed themselves in the small boats and reached a tiny island near the harbor. Alexander prepared ships with ladders to assault its rocky sides, but unlike at Granicus, he accepted their surrender and enlisted them into his own forces. Citizens who had not fought or survived the initial massacre were pardoned, and their famous city was allowed to continue as his subjects. Unwilling to challenge the enemy at sea, Alexander sent Philotas with 3 regiments of infantry and cavalry to harass the Persian camp. So we have the beginning of movement, and it's one of the things that you really don't get much chance to do in teaching situation unless your whole course is Alexander. When I taught in high school, we usually spent a couple of days on Alexander's conquest, but it's mainly the main battles and the ultimate outcome. In college, spent a little bit more time with a little bit more detail, but the gaps where you go from Granicus to Issus are significant. And they hardly get a chance to talk about Tyre, and a little bit on Egypt, and then suddenly you're at the Battle of Arbela. And then it fades off again until you get to Porus and the Battle of the Hydaspes River. So you hit the big things because that allows the time, but this material in between those is extremely helpful to see how he's putting everything together. So that's where we'll pick up as he heads from Miletus to Halicarnassus. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch. Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy. History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond. In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arrian's The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.